As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast about following Watford Football Club, brought to you by The Athletic. My name is John. With me today is Jason.
Yeah, all right.
Oh, and Mike.
Do you know what? I went to the beach on Thursday and I saw my mum and dad for the first time in a long time with the kids. It was a lovely family day. My sister was there and it was probably the best day I've had in a very, very long time. I was absolutely on cloud nine. And I thought, God, if Watford can just do the business on Saturday, this will be one of the best weeks I've had in a very, very long time.
And Watford didn't do the business. But don't worry. Adam will join us later on. He's been at Kenilworth Road today. But in part three today, we've got a wonderful retrospective looking back on Watford's 4-0 win away at the Kennel in 1997. It's well worth the wait. But Mike, you know, we'll get into the game itself and chat to Jace. But, you know, as a result, as a game as a whole, when you were sat watching it, where were you at? I mean, we can say frustrated and upset. You know, and maybe so, but you know, the fact is that we've lost a game, but we have only lost 1 point on the catching pair.
Look, in the build-up, you know, we've all been thinking about it non-stop really this week, haven't we? We've known this has been a massive game with potentially massive consequences, and I think as supporters we want to beat Luton. It is the derby. We're absolutely desperate to beat them, regardless of whether promotion, relegation, qualifying for Europe, FA Cup, League Cup, whatever, you just want to beat them. And I was sort of thinking during the week, it's fine, you know, the club are doing their little rabble-rousing little videos and the players are saying all the right things. I said, you know, that's fine. The players will be cocooned away from all this. They don't need to hear that. They don't need the emotional side of things. They don't need to have it reinforced how important the game is, because that side of thing is for us. What they need to do is just take care of things because we need to get promoted. But actually, having watched the game and the way they started and the way they didn't impose themselves on the game, perhaps they did need a little bit more of that rabble-rousing, a little bit more impressing on them just the importance of this game on both counts, really, because I think already most Watford fans have, you know, we've swallowed that horrible bitter pill that is losing to Luton. You know, that's a stain that you can't wash off ever. It's another one in the win column for them, and everyone in the win column for them is like a, you know, it's painful, it's horrible, it's nasty, and we can't get away from that. But I think we've sort of swallowed that pill, taken that medicine pretty quickly, and are now assessing the damage it's done in terms of the promotion run. You know, you can imagine there's people ranging from writing on the back of fag packets in pub gardens, if you've been lucky enough to get a seat in a pub, to the more organised people feverishly working out Excel spreadsheets, taking into account the form of Brentford and Swansea, perhaps even Bournemouth if they get a win against Norwich. They'll be on 74 points if they manage to do that, level with Brentford, trying to work out the impact that this will have on our season as we enter the final straight. And I think the most disappointing thing about it is taking them both, you know, together, really, the fact it's a derby and the fact it's a massive derby in terms of our tilt for promotion. You have to say the side didn't turn up. That was a very, very poor performance against a, you know, let's be honest, an average Luton side. I saw them last week at Wickham, and Wickham were 1-0 up, held them at arm's length for a long period of the game until Wickham went down to 10 men, and eventually Luton ran out on top. But, you know, Watford are a better side than Luton Town. Luton fans would agree with that. But there was precious little evidence of that today, and it's impossible to be, you know, anything. I think furious is taking it too far. You know, it's been a decent season, and still will turn out to be one. But it's very, very, very disappointing that Watford weren't able to ask more questions of what basically is a very, very average football team.
Well, we'll talk about sort of the impact of this performance later on, and going into the final four games of the season. Jason, you know, the game started badly, and I really think the game started badly because of the two changes that were made. Not just because they were two changes, but, you know, Lazar coming in for Messina very, very, very late, and also the fact that Chalobah wasn't going to start, so it meant Will Hughes wasn't playing in that slightly deepest role of the midfield, just threw things off more than we sort of anticipated.
Whenever you get a late change like the Lazar having to come in for Messina, that will disrupt things a bit. But to be honest, I think there was more than that. It wasn't just two players coming into the side that caused a problem. I mean, Sanchez did okay in his sort of defensive role. Perhaps the bigger impact there was having to move Hughes further forward, because I think he struggled today in that position. Some of his decision making, when to release the ball, when to shoot, probably made the wrong decisions there. But I think all in all, the performance wasn't great, was it? I mean, you talk about the opening 10 minutes not being very good. They came at us. Talking about the Lazar, or the impact of Lazar coming on, the thing that worried me when I heard that was that they would switch Loire over to the other side, up against a player that hasn't got many minutes in the tank. I thought they would switch him and he would rip Lazar to shreds. Actually, they kept him down, played more down the left-hand side, up against Kiko, and Kiko seemed scared of him, and Kiko had a poor game today. And they overloaded those areas as well. They had Adebayo as well, drifted left, big man up against the little man, pretty basic stuff, really. Kiko really, really struggled, and that, as much as anything, disappointed me. And obviously the culmination in that was the two yellow cards. Both times he's put the hands in the back of, I think it was Loire on both occasions. You're just asking for a yellow card. So not going to point the problems at the changes that had to be made. Overall, a poor performance. But it was our experienced players, particularly around Kiko, that was probably the biggest concern.
I think John's right. I do think they did have a massive unsettling impact, because I think I could kind of see why they'd switch them round. You know, you'd think that Will Hughes is, or assume that Will Hughes is more versatile than Sanchez. So to put Will Hughes more advanced and drop Sanchez back kind of makes sense in that. And in fairness, Will Hughes was probably, at least he was sort of involved and making things happen. Jason, you're absolutely right. He couldn't get rid of it on time, or he, the ball was bobbling around. I think that was a problem for him, for everyone, for both sides. But yeah, decision making poor. But I just think it just feels Watford are so much better when they're higher up the pitch, aren't they? You know, Kiko and Ismail Assar down the right-hand side, Kiko getting forward. We're the ones asking the questions, and that's when we look so much more solid, don't we? It's when the ball is coming back over on both sides that we tend to struggle. And I think the fact that Luton, like a lot of teams in the last couple of weeks, did so well at jamming up their left, our right. You know, Ismail Assar, how many touches did he have? Not many. Certainly, he didn't get any balls to gallop onto, did he? And he didn't have the beating of his man on many occasions at all. So they stopped that route pretty successfully, didn't they? Which in turn drove us back a little bit because we didn't have that outlet. They weren't sort of necessarily worried. They just stopping that was good enough for them. They could push forward a little bit, and both flanks suffered. You know, it's Kiko's worst game for a long time. We do have to look at Lazar and say, you know, he was poor throughout, and a bit of a head scratcher signing. I guess it was just a body that we could get in at the time, and someone to come on to play 10-15 minutes perhaps is fine. But he did look like he struggled, and of course it culminated in an absolutely woeful back pass for the penalty. Perhaps Batman ever so slightly slow to react, but I thought he was expecting a much better pass, wasn't he? And he was kind of wrong-footed, and it took that split second for him to get back onto the right foot, take off and try and get there. He thought he was being sent off, didn't he? He'd had his bottle, he was sort of wandering off, ready to be replaced. And, you know, promotion sides don't make the mistakes like that, or they beat them, they get around them somehow. And they get the point when they haven't played well. And we weren't able to do that today. And that was a very, very costly mistake from Lazar.
We haven't had a game like this since QPR. It's been a long, long time. I mean, I know we've won lots of games in there. You know, we've only lost against Bournemouth in a very unique, you know, set of minutes in that game. And then this is felt similar to QPR, but actually QPR were able to bang some goals into the net to win a bit more convincingly than Luton. Is this a performance that you are going to worry about in the final four games?
Possibly. I mean, Luton, Bournemouth, QPR. I mean, that just
the unholy trinity.
I hate that. Are there any three other teams? It's lucky Palace aren't down in our division. Otherwise, probably end up losing to them as well. It pains me to think about losing to those three sides. Hate it, absolutely hate it. Am I gonna worry about that performance? Let's see how we do against Norwich. It's a hard benchmark, isn't it? We've got to go to the team that are going to win the league. We're not going to catch them now, are we? Whilst it is still mathematically possible, I'm finding it very unlikely. They will play with a bit more freedom now they're already promoted, and we will probably be a bit more tense because of today's performance. Let's see how we do. You got the other teams. The other teams have struggled today, and I think that's probably taken the edge off it a little bit for me as well. We talk about the other sides dropping points. Of the three fixtures, I mean, Swansea not beating Wickham at home, they will be absolutely gutted.
Yeah.
Brentford really should be beating Millwall at home. We've got the away game, a derby game. We said it would be very different. We said there'd be a lot of hype around it, and that potentially makes it the tougher fixture of the three. It could have been worse for us. Doesn't excuse the performance or the result, but it could have been worse. So I think that takes the edge off the panic just that little bit. I'm not going to get too flustered about it at the moment. And the players, they need to draw a line under it, and they need to show us the form that they've been showing for the previous however many games it was that we won on the trot.
That's it, Jace.
Or didn't lose. Yeah. That's what they need to do. Yeah. They need to be thinking positive. They cannot afford to worry about it. They need to get themselves sorted, get back on the bus and start picking up points again.
Let me get my little bit of negativity in then, Jason. I think you're right. The only thing that matters now with four games to go is how they react. That's all there is to it. We've said all along, promoted teams need to win games. Nothing's changed. They still need to win games, and they've got opportunity to do that. They're good enough to do it. Let's go and see if they do. The thing that concerned me probably more as the game is percolating in my brain is the number of saves that the Luton keepers had to make, which is zero. Luton had 16 shots to our five, and you could argue if they'd had their shooting boots on or a slightly better touch or a better striker up top, they would have beaten us comfortably. Have we been found out up top a little bit, do you think? The fact that we weren't able to carve a decent opportunity. Obviously, Andre Gray was unlucky a little bit to get that offside call against him, and we could have got away with a point. If we had got away with a point, it would have been exactly that. It would have been a travesty, really, wouldn't it? We didn't deserve anything out of the game. Luton made all the running. But we didn't even carve out a couple of chances, did we? I didn't feel. Is there a worry that this, you stop Sarr, you stop everything?
I think to say we've been found out is probably taking it a bit too far. It's what, the first time we haven't scored since Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And you can say, and it's pretty much, I think for this particular game, it's what you said, Mike, is that they attacked down the left and it stopped us being effective on our right. You could see the way they were playing. Talked about Adebayo pulling himself out wide left, Lualua down the left. You had, was his name, Dewsbury Hall, was drifting left as well. And they were overloading their left-hand side.
I think I went to a Christmas do there once.
Which, very good. Which meant we were having to put players out there to defend. I mean, Sarr was having to drop back a bit more. And he wasn't able to play on the shoulder of the fullback because he was having to do a lot more defensive work than he was expecting to. And effectively, I mean, because they were bringing men out to the left, they had less potency in the middle, really. And that's probably why the majority of their shots were off target. And yeah, they should have done better, but perhaps didn't have the men in the middle to finish because they were out on the left. But that seemed to be what their approach was. To attack like that, to stop us from attacking where our strengths were. And we've seen it before. It's not the first time this season that we've had problems creating chances. But for the previous 7 or 8 games, we have. And we've scored goals in every one of those games. So I think it's probably taking it a bit too far. If Luton have set themselves up like that to not lose a game, then OK, that makes it harder. And if other teams will do that, then that will make it hard. I don't. Perhaps Millwall will next week. Perhaps that's what they've done today against Brentford. Perhaps that's why that's finished 0-0. But the other teams are going to be looking to win. Norwich potentially could be winning the league on Tuesday night. We'll be looking to win. Brentford and Swansea need to win and will be looking to win, unless it's already done by that stage. So we should be able to create opportunities against those sides because they won't be playing, I think, in the manner that Luton will be playing. They will be a lot more focused on trying to score goals rather than protecting their left-hand side from Ismaïla Sarr.
Mike, we saw we've already talked about the sending off of Kiko after not playing a very good game. How you feel about Mark Navarro and Lazar starting against Norwich? How you feeling? What's going to happen, do you think?
We can only hope that doesn't happen. I mean,
hope. Dream, nightmare.
We're going to go to Norwich, who have been promoted. Congratulations to them. They've been the most consistent side throughout the piece. We've known they've been going to get promoted for some time now, but fair play to them. So it can do funny things to a side. You know, how they play will be interesting. But what we do know is that the brakes are off. They've got nothing to worry about. And they've got some pretty, pretty good players who, when they're enjoying themselves, they really enjoy themselves. And, you know, we know we're going to be without Kiko. Where Jeremy Ngakia was, we're not sure. But my sincere hope is that Ngakia is fit to play right back and that Messina is well enough to come in at left back. Because what we cannot afford is Norwich to run riot on Tuesday against us. Now, that shouldn't happen. You know, there's no point getting too morose and too carried away. As you both pointed out, you know, this is a disappointing afternoon, but it's by no means by terminal in any regard. So we don't need to all of a sudden think, oh, yeah, we're going to get absolutely smashed by Norwich. There's no reason we should if we're serious about getting promoted, quite frankly. But you do hope that we can get those two better performers in defensively. I just wanted to ask you both as well about success. What did we think about the halftime substitution?
When I saw it, I thought, okay, perhaps we're going to go two up top. We're going to change the formation, change the way we're playing, just to try and impose ourselves on them more. I thought, okay, success, big guy. Yeah, I thought he was going to bully the likes of Bradley and Pearson because they're two big lumps at the back. Pedro wasn't getting much joy out of them, so I thought we'd give them something to occupy them rather than them constantly trying to occupy us in the attacking stakes. We kept the same formation. We moved Pedro back into midfield. That immediately, I thought, didn't feel like the right choice in a game where the opposition are imposing themselves on us and we've not been able to create much. I felt we needed to almost beat fire with fire. And while success coming on felt like we were doing that, putting Pedro into midfield didn't. That felt like it would weaken the midfield to me. The other thing that worried me was that Pedro would also get sucked into a battle. And we know that Pedro likes a bit of a fight, he likes to retaliate, And I was worried that we'd see a red card from Pedro rather than anyone else on the pitch. And when you've got Cleverley on the bench, OK, we didn't know how fit he was. You've got Gosling on the bench. If you're going to take Zinc off, then perhaps bring one of those two on instead to try and change the midfield, you know, or make a if you want success on as well, be brave, be bold, make a double substitution at halftime. Take Pedro off and take Zinchenko off.
I thought it was going to go one of two ways, and sadly it went the negative way, as you pointed out. I don't think it worked at all. I thought Isaac's success was really disappointing. I think it's very difficult to throw him in a game like that. But he's obviously showing something in training, isn't he, for him to get these opportunities. And his goal scoring record over the years at Watford has been appalling. He hasn't delivered. At all with any degree of consistency since he's been at the club, but he's obviously doing something to get thrown in, and I felt like, right, this could be the moment for it to change. But
this was going to be his moment for Watford legend, where he would go and score a hat trick against Luton.
Yeah, because of course he's probably the only Watford player in history to have a banner of him at Kenilworth Road, which I found a little bit odd that they've got Watford players on the wall at the ground. Never mind.
For crying out loud, if he needed any inspiration, it was there on the side. Yeah. I mean, I know it was a dig at Watford, but surely as a player being on that poster, you would look at that and that would hurt, or at least, fire something up inside to get going. And he just didn't play with that intensity. We talk about the penalty where Backman got caught a bit off guard with the back pass. Adebayo didn't get caught off guard. He went for it. You wouldn't have seen... If this was the other way round, success would not have got to the ball before Slugger, because he would not have put in the effort in that run to get to the ball. Not good enough from Isaac today.
Too interested. So, as soon as he came on, 2 minutes in, he'd got into a little bit of argy-bargy with one of the Luton players. And I think a couple of minutes later there was a terrible challenge for him. Is it Berry for Luton? And it was a yellow card all day long, but because we'd had petulance from Isaac's success a couple of moments before, I think the ref was just like, right, let's calm this down, let's sort of try and take the sting out of it, which in fairness is probably the right decision. But it just felt like you've got an opportunity here to come on, buzz around, use your strength, use what you're showing in training, be sharp, maximum effort for 45 minutes. And you know, it is difficult to force a change. It is difficult to be that conduit. It is difficult to be the spark for that, especially when you're trying to make it happen. It can often go the other way. So I do have sympathy for him. I'm not saying he was bad on purpose, but I just thought he turned out to be a pretty poor option. I mean, he just didn't get the fire and just the determination and energy from him. And I just wonder whether we saw Parizza talk about forgotten men. He turned up for the under-23s the other day, didn't he? So I wonder if he's obviously fit, but massively out of favour. I just wonder with what we've seen today, whether Isaac's success might have, you know, blotted his copybook to the extent that Parizza comes back in from the cold and he starts on the bench. But yeah, overall, I thought he was a perfect example of it just not clicking, not going well enough for Watford. And I don't think anyone, him included, covered themselves in glory at all.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
We weren't at the game. Nobody was. Well, some people were. And, of course, Adam Leventhal, the Watford correspondent for The Athletic, was at Kenilworth Road. And as he was sat in his car on his way out, trying to keep his head down because, you know, hey, it's Luton, Mike and I caught up with him to find out what his take was on this game. How was it for you today being at Kenilworth Road for a derby match against Luton, but nobody was there?
Genuinely, it was a reminder of how grim it is to be at Kenilworth Road. I'll be brutally honest. It's not a nice stadium. I know a lot of people, you know, have a lot of hatred for Luton and you know, there's a lot of animosity and it is a genuinely bitter rivalry. But the point I'm making is, yes, it's grim. It's tight. The way that they've got the ground set up at the moment, there's no dugout. So you're sort of sat in the stand in terms of the substitutes. The head coach is in front of the advertising hoarding. So it feels very, very different. And I think generally, overall, Watford just didn't deal with being in that environment. And it was a point that Nathan Jones made, the Luton manager, after the game, that imagine if Luton fans had been there, they probably would have won 3 or 4-0 because Watford were never really, really in the game. Just in general terms of actually being in the stadium, it wasn't a nice experience from start to finish. There were moments when I thought Watford were getting a little bit of a foot.
Adam, can I pick you up on that and just ask whether you think there might be a slight issue with some of these players turning up at these grounds, which are, shall we say, less salubrious than Vicarage Road? And they don't seem to do well there, do they? I mean, Watford, I think, you know, we have to say Luton deserved the win today. They were at it from the start to the end and Watford didn't get a look in. But it felt like a very flat performance, very similar, but in a way, to the performance at Wickham, which is another ground which is sort of more lacking in facilities, shall we say. Do you think these guys are turning up on the bus, sort of looking at their surroundings and sort of going, you know, this is naff. We just need to turn up and knock them over, because it's just peculiar. It just seems to me that they just didn't get going at all, did they? And I just wonder whether there's a sort of subconscious attitudinal shift when they play at these sort of less impressive grounds against lower key clubs. Do you think there's an issue there?
I think today in particular, it felt like a culture shock sort of game. And I think you're right, that Wickham game earlier on, they didn't look like they knew what was going to happen to them. And it was very much the same today. But to be brutally honest, and to be honest, I thought that Nathan Jones's analysis of the game afterwards, we learnt a lot more about the actual game from him than we did speaking to Shisko Mioz, who basically was saying we need to sort of take this as a wake-up call, and we were going to have bad moments, and you know, we need to stick together, etc., etc. What you would expect him to say. What Nathan Jones was saying was, we tactically outfoxed them, and I think they did. That's what you need to remember. Yes, it can be a bit of a grim ground and a bit sort of rough around the edges and all that sort of stuff. And yes, I know it is a slightly smaller pitch and things like that, and the environment does make a difference, but it is still just a football pitch. And Watford should have been far better. They should have been better in terms of dealing tactically with the game. There was mitigation, obviously, the fact that Adam Messina dropped out of the warm-up relatively early, and I noticed this quite early on, that Ashraf Lazar was actually taking part, almost shadowing Adam Messina during the warm-up. And I was thinking, hang on a minute. And you know, Messina was sort of gingerly kicking a few balls here and there, and then he walked off, and I thought, right, okay, here we go. And I suppose if you've not been training all week with the expectation of actually lining up, it is difficult then to slip into gear. And I'll be brutally honest, I don't think Ashraf Lazar is very good. I thought he was caught out of position numerous occasions. I thought he was getting sucked into play. I thought he looked dangerous when the ball was going over the top. There were a couple of moments, you know, he had a decent, you know, swing at a ball that went over to Saar on the right-hand second half. That was probably his best moment. But just prior to getting caught out of position and then playing that horrendous back pass, he committed a sort of a moment where he did get sucked in and he very nearly gave the ball away. And then just a couple of moments, he did it again. And the same for Kiko Femenia. We know, and it was very similar to the game against Bournemouth, if you fling the ball over the top of him and you get him turning and you get him running towards his own goal with a bit of pace up against him, he struggles. And we knew this from the Premier League. You know, a lot of people have been saying how great Kiko Femenia is this season. Yeah, he has been, but he's been playing in the Championship. And last season, defensively, okay, under Nigel Pearson, yes, he was doing better, and he was very adaptable, and he played over on the left-hand side, etc., etc. But we know that there is a weakness there. And I said to Nathan Jones after the game, I said, you'd basically seen that if you fling the ball over the top, over the two fullbacks, you get a bit of width, you're going to have some joy. And he basically said, have you been sort of watching our training sessions? Because that's one of the things that we were working on. And it was a clear plan. Luton looked like they had a plan. Watford didn't look like they had a plan, and they didn't really have that mental resilience to fall back on, because they looked like they were at sixes and sevens right from the start. So they never really got going. I thought the change that was made sense. I thought success then gave them an opportunity to have an out ball, because, you know, Luton were pressing hard. They weren't getting any opportunities to play it to either fullback. They didn't want to play it to the left anyway, because Lazar looks a little bit shaky. They didn't have the opportunity to play it to the right-hand side, because they were closing that gap as well. So they needed an out ball. So having success up top made sense. He was a bit more of a physical presence. But they never really, really grasped the game after that. And, you know, it's a real shame. They've got away with it a little bit with, you know, Swansea and Brentford both drawing, but you can't be relying on other games. And then they go into a game against Norwich without Kiko Femenia. Hopefully Messina will be back. They'll have to play Jeremy Ngakia, who I think probably should have been playing. And I have no information to suggest that he's not available at the moment. So hopefully he'll be able to come in. Maybe Ben Wilmot can come in as backup as well. It's getting tense. And this one needs to be dealt with properly, pulled apart. They need to acknowledge that they weren't at the races and they were out-muscled by a team that were better prepared and more motivated for a big game. Watford should have done better and they didn't.
I was going to say you had the privilege and honour of being there, Adam, but I can tell, A, from the game and B, from your tone of voice, you don't view it as that at all. But you saw the game firsthand. And one thing that I picked up on, and this is by no means a defence of Watford, I make you right in everything you say, it's a very, very disappointing display. But just talk to me quickly about the pitch, Adam, and how much you think that might have impacted the way Watford played. And I do want to make it clear, I'm not making excuses for what was a poor performance across the board, really. But it did look like the ball, it was almost like Shooter McGavin hitting a three-wood down a pavement, the way the ball sort of bounced around. And Watford never really came to terms with that. And that, you know, you have to say Watford do need to come to terms with that. You're not always going to play on a good pitch. But was that a big factor, or am I clutching at straws here?
No, I think it was a factor. It's clearly a factor. You know, you've obviously picked it up from watching it on the television. Yeah, it was bobbly. It wasn't very nice. But I saw, and I was right behind the Luton dugout, literally right behind it, feel Mick Harford's breath, you know, as he turned around and was sort of shouting and stuff. So I was right behind them. And at one point, Nathan Jones turned around and went, oh, it's bobbly, it's bobbly. So it's just an almost sort of just sticking a flag in the fact that, yes, it was the same for both teams. Yes, Luton are going to be more used to it because this is their home ground. They're going to be more used to the environment. They're going to be more used to the pitch and things like that. But come on, it Watford needed to be better, and they needed to find a way of almost just sort of pulling themselves away from the melee and finding some space, finding some time. Yes, it's very difficult when you're being pressed all the time, but they needed a plan B, and they didn't really find one throughout the game. I haven't seen the equalising goal that was disallowed, but I heard someone from the Luton staff after the game who said it was tight, but it was offside. So, you know, they haven't even got a controversial moment to fall back on. They were beaten, and they could have been beaten by three or four goals. So, yes, the pitch was bad, but it, overall, everything else was bad as well on Watford's behalf. They weren't sort of, you know, they weren't lily-livered. They were still sort of flying in for tackles when they needed to towards the end. And I think they were more combative in the second half, which they needed to be. But just overall, Luton just looked like they knew what they were supposed to be doing. And Watford didn't. They got frustrated. And I think that was seen when Kiko got sent off. You know, he committed that exactly the same foul when the ball was flung over before. Just a silly nudge. And then doing exactly the same thing once again, and then sort of getting a little bit of chirp from the director's box in the whatever stand I was sat in. The one opposite the conservatories or whatever it is, in that stand, they were sort of giving him quite a lot of, and he responded as he walked off and kicked a bin and all this sort of stuff. And I think that just summed up the day, really, that it was frustrating. It felt gnarly. It felt just like you didn't want to be there. And I think, you know, Kiko couldn't have got out of there quicker if he tried. And it's a real shame because it was a game where they could have made a statement and shown that they were really up for the fight. And I'm nervy now. I'm edgy, and I just hope that they can get themselves back up for what is going to be, you know, a proper, pure footballing test against Norwich midweek. You know, they don't want to come away from that with a heavy defeat, because then they will have to get points against Millwall to try and get over the line. And then you've got Swansea and Brentford. And if they're still sniffing blood in those last two games, well, let's see what happens.
Remember to check out theathletic.com/rookeryend if you are yet to subscribe to The Athletic, where you can check out all Adam's writing and all the wealth of writers that they have writing about the world of sport. If you do subscribe, you'll get the in-depth news, analysis and the storytelling from some of the best sports writers, and hopefully help you see the game from every angle possible. Just go to theathletic.com/rookeryend and sign up for a £3.99 subscription. That's £1 a week or about 14p a day.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Watford against Luton. It's a rivalry that's been going on since 1885. There's been a lot of games. We played each other a lot of time. But the first game back in 1885 was just a friendly. They didn't stay that way. This little retrospective is about one game in particular, the 4th of October 1997, where Watford, under Graham Taylor, took a trip to Kenilworth Road. And it had been a long time since Watford had beaten the Hatters. His Watford fan, author and blogger, Matt Rowson.
It had been 10 years, but 10 years in which we played them every season. I mean, we'd not been relegated with them from the top flight, but they followed and played them twice a season. Most of them, from memory, were dour, nasty draws, which would have been of zero interest to anybody not directly involved. I mean, they were terrible games of football for the most part. There were a couple of exceptions, which was still terrible, but for different reasons. We lost on the first day of the season at Kenilworth Road in the early 90s. And my lingering memory of that is of Kerry Dixon then at Luton stamping on Darren Baisley and getting away with it. I remember being outraged. There was also a horrible game at Vicarage Road, which we lost 4-2. The other thing about 10 years is that 10 years was so much longer then than it is now. It's a function of getting older that time moves ever so much more quickly. Possibly a reflection of the football we were playing at the time, which wasn't terrific.
So that's what things had been like with Luton for the last 10 years or so. What about at the time of 1997? How are Watford fans feeling about the rivalry? Here's Colin Mace. Colin from the Rookery End, but also the Hornet Heaven Watford podcast.
It was an interesting part of my Watford career. We'd been relegated into what is now League One, the third tier, and we'd had a season with Taylor back at the club as a kind of overseeing figure, but Kenny Jackett was the first team coach, and we had high hopes. In the late 90s, we were both really not doing as well, and it kind of intensified the rivalry. Who's going to get better first, if you like?
And Watford fan Pete Fincham was certainly ready for this game.
You've got nothing but draws and a solitary win in the Anglo-Italian to talk about. By the time you get to your mid-20s and you're going week in, week out, and it's such an ingrained part of your life, and all your friends who you hang out with are going to the game, and you're looking forward to this for months since the fixture list come out in the second Thursday of June or whatever it was. You're looking for Luton at home, you're looking for Luton away, and then you see it 4th of October, and then for weeks, it's only 3 weeks till Luton. 3 weeks, only 2 weeks till Luton, as you draw one all at home to York City. And then the following week, you know, it's a massive anticlimax. You know, you're losing at home to Millwall, but you're still beating Luton. Because for 10 years, then it was worth the wait. 10 years. There was just something about it that it had to end, and it had to end, I thought, at that point.
So Pete's ready for the game, that's for sure. What about Colin? How are Watford doing at that point, very early in the season of 1997-1998?
I think we won six out of the first seven and then drew the next two. We were top of the league after nine games. And the next game was against our fiercest and most hated rivals, that lot up the road. And then going there, it's like they say about all derbies, you know, the form doesn't really matter. You go along and all bets are off, basically.
Merriment began early. I think there was a sense of confidence that day that was probably not really justified given our 10 years of hell against them. And the fact we'd only drawn one all against York City the previous week. Things have sort of slightly come off the rails after an encouraging start, but for some reason we were weirdly confident.
Watford fan Stu Hutchinson was also at the game.
I went with three mates, one of whom was more of a Spurs fan, really. We took the supporters' coach, which we'd started to do for Luton away, just because being afraid for your personal safety just becomes a bit tiring as you get older. Best advice my dad ever gave me was never drink in a flat roof pub. And the first thing I remember about that day was our coach swinging around the corner onto the Dunstable Road. And just by that Sainsbury's was a flat roof pub and a load of Luton fans. At the first sight of our coach, they came crashing out of the pub and started throwing their plastic pint glasses in the direction of our reinforced glass windows.
But not everybody took the club coach. Mike Smart, for example, drove himself to Luton.
It was my first and so far only visit to the kennel. At the time, I had a yellow 2CV, of which I was very proud, and of course, as my first car, it was suitably bedecked in Watfordness. I'd heard of trouble, obviously, but had never seen a flicker of it any time we played them at home, so I was naive to the potential for bodily harm. Either that, or I was more concerned for the welfare of my 2CV than myself, as I removed all Watfordness from the car, but proudly wore my home shirt. Parked up, got into the ground, such as it is, with no issues.
Pete Fincham again.
There was just the sort of the usual knucklehead abuse of people running out of pubs and trying to give it the big I am going down the main road. But I mean, it didn't feel on the outside that there was much more than it was just another game against Luton. It didn't feel threatening, but we didn't hang around, granted. I mean, we still had to walk through someone's back garden to get into the ground, and in the same way as you're almost looking into their bathroom as you're coming out. I mean, it really is a horrible, horrible place.
Arriving at Kenilworth Road. It's something to be remembered and to be cherished. Well, maybe not cherished. Stu Hutchinson.
I always like taking people to the kennel for the first time. You could describe the Oak Road entrance in advance as much as you like, but nothing could ever really prepare them for it. The look on their faces as they pick their way through people's washing lines as they zigzagged up to the stand.
So once you're through the turnstiles, what was it like at Kenilworth Road that day?
It would be entirely wrong to use the word executive, but those boxes on the left-hand side, that was the side we were nearest in the away end. I remember the patio doors nearest us had sort of six blokes, large blokes in Giacomo clothing, and in there, and they were really up for it. They were giving it quite large, at least at first.
From about 2 o'clock, this insane level of singing between the two sets of fans, which really doesn't happen. I mean, certainly doesn't happen these days, except for in the most intense environment. Singing about the green houses and some fat bloke who ate all the pies and all those sort of things were brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It kept us completely mesmerised on the event as opposed to having an opportunity to think about what might happen.
Everybody was there, everybody was ready, the players were on the pitch. It was going to be one of those really tense, those really tight, those really cautious sort of derby matches. But it was anything but, because after 4 minutes, this happened.
Free kick towards the advancing figure of Rosenthal. Now Johnson, good try! And Davis looks in despair.
To score early at Kenilworth Road, and what a beautiful goal it was. You see Ronnie Rosenthal sort of fighting for the ball in the box, and he lays it back to Jono. We'd seen him do it many times, the shot from outside the box, the low drilled shot, the one into the top corner. He seemed to just He just, one of those players that, he never scored a tap-in, but then that wasn't his position. But if he scored, it was normally, you know, a strike from 18, 20 yards and hit true and hard. And this was no exception. As soon as he came onto it, I mean, I can remember the hairs on the back of my neck as the ball kind of came out to him in a hurry and he just smacked it. It was just unbridled joy.
Frankly, they never really got into the game. I don't ever remember feeling as though the result was in doubt after Jono scored.
Di Thomas scored the second one. I mean, I had no memory of him as a player at all.
This powerful start. Slater, now Kennedy. Thomas has got there between the two defenders. Thomas, 2-0. What a start for the Hornets.
19 minutes gone and Watford were 2 goals to the good. And the fun didn't stop there. A certain Mr. Peter Kennedy had one of the best 2 minutes of his entire career.
Kennedy was one of my favourite players. And there was just something about Kennedy. And I think Taylor must have absolutely loved him because he really came into the side as a prominent player during that first Taylor season. He had talent. He had real quality. Couldn't understand a word the man said. He had an incredibly thick Ulster accent, but a really nice, warm-hearted, smiley individual. Always seemed to play with a smile on his face and epitomised a lot of Taylor's philosophy. He was incredibly hard-working. If he popped up, if you gave him a chance, he could strike the ball as clean as anybody. The unbridled joy of scoring those goals against Luton, it meant something to him personally. He knew it meant a lot to the fans. It meant a lot to the club.
Targeted Kennedy. Thomas tried. Second attempt by Millen. Third by Kennedy. What a strike by the Ulsterman.
And goal number four.
Peter Kennedy went round on the left-hand side and he did that sort of cartwheel with his arm to try and feign that he was going a different way. And it's like, I remember doing that when I was 7. And he did it and he fooled them. And obviously we couldn't hear Di Thomas yell mine or keepers or whatever he did yell.
They're trying to build it, but they've lost it to Kennedy. Now, can he do something with this? Beautifully cut inside, right footed, four! 32 minutes gone!
It was just that when the chances came, when they fell, they went in. And it was one of those games. And after 32 minutes, we were 4-0 up. From then on, it kind of, I can't really remember, John, because it was a kind of delirium. There was a sort of delirium as this thing just snowballed out of control.
I know it was a long time ago, but memories of the detail aren't particularly strong with our fans who are helping us with this retrospective. Such as Stu Hutchinson. Doesn't remember the details, but certain things live long in the memory.
I don't remember much about the goals at all, to be honest, because it's so low down there. I remember after one of them, sort of scrambling over all these other Watford fans, trying to get to the other end of the Oak Road end, sort of that corner where the main stand was. That's where most of the real Luton Herberts were. And I just remember everyone with two fingers up in the air, just trying to get as close as possible to the Luton fans. So it was your fingers that they could see, you know, your two fingers that were the ones that they could see.
Colin Mace remembers a noise. Well, not quite a noise at all, really.
What I do remember was the silence. I mean, obviously not where we were, because you were under that very low roof and you made an incredible amount. It was so loud, the celebrations. As that died down and the ball is brought back to the centre circle and put on the spot so the game can be restarted by the Luton players, there was just this deafening silence around Kenilworth Road. There wasn't even like booing or complaining. And as each goal went in, the silence got deeper as they just thought, oh my God, we're getting spanked. We're getting an absolute spanking.
By this point, I'm sure Lenny Lawrence, the Luton manager, and all the Luton players just wanted half-time to get there pretty quickly. But it got a little bit weird at half-time.
I remember the police horse coming on and surrounding the Luton dugout to stop their fans getting at Lenny Lawrence. You know, the Giacomo lads in the patio doors, I suppose, with their sort of lofty status, they were allowed to drink their lager out of glassware, but they didn't throw them at us. They didn't throw their sort of cooking lager bottles at us, which is quite sweet of them, really, because, you know, by this point, there was a police horse playing right mid for Luton. So you think, if you know, surely by now anything goes. But they, you know, they didn't throw their bottles at us, which I sort of thank them for, really.
Well, I think the horses, they were a great memory of half-time, but we were actually dodging bricks. I mean, it got really naughty. There was quite a lot of things lobbed at us during the half-time. Obviously, we could have gone 5-0 up had that penalty been given.
I mean, these Luton fans, these half a dozen Luton fans in the patio doors nearest us, they were having a terrible time in the second half. I mean, it looked like it was the worst £12 they'd ever spent. The only person probably having a worse time was my Spurs mate, who spent the whole second half sitting down with his head in his hands, you know, thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die here in a provincial skirmish of which I've got no real interest anyway.
The final whistle blew and Watford were, of course, the 4-0 victors. It could have been 5. Depends how you look at that penalty. Was it a penalty? Was it not a penalty? Was it not a penalty because the referee decided that maybe things might get a bit hairy if the game got any worse? But it had been 10 years and it was such a momentous win for Watford fans. Here's Matt Rowson again with how he felt at that final whistle.
It was remarkable and it was cathartic. I think we knew at the time, but it's even more evident since, that it was a parting of the ways. You know, we'd been in the same division as Luton for most of my Watford supporting life. You look back at certainly at Graham Taylor's spell and we gave as good as we got, actually, although my recollection is that we lost most of the time, but we didn't really. But it was a tremendous, a tremendous landmark event. And the fact that we're still talking about it so many years on is testimony to that.
The thing about having Graham Taylor in that season playing that game against Luton was that there was no one else really in the world who felt that rivalry more than him, I think. He would never come out and say it because obviously he was calm guy, it's just another game and it's we just want the 3 points. But, you know, he knew what that rivalry meant through that first period of management at Watford, and I'm sure that he managed to communicate that.
The win was in the bag, but it was time to go home. But the trip out of Kenilworth Road, through the gardens, getting to the coaches and the cars and getting home, wasn't a spectacular journey for many Watford fans. Stu Hutchinson again.
It was only 4 steps from the exit to the coach, like the width of a pavement, but we still hurried it. You know, you still bounded across the pavement to get onto the coach. And, you know, as we pulled away, that coach felt like, it felt like the last helicopter out of Saigon as we moved away, you know. You looked out the window and occasionally saw the odd flash of yellow darting around, running around, yelling, trying to find sanctuary. And you just thought, oh God, I hope to God they're going to be okay.
Mike Smart again.
Deciding near the end that my shirt should go under my jumper for the walk to the car and not over it. We were held back in Oak Road for 10 minutes. Nothing unusual about that. And frankly, it was just another 10 minutes to celebrate with my brothers and sisters before going off on my own. Then they let us go and I turned left and set off up Dunstable Road. And where I expected to see lots of police, there were none. Instead, there were groups of Luton fans who had gathered, some innocently mourning the afternoon from hell, others with more sinister intentions. One bloke, built like the proverbial brick item of construction, crossed the road towards us and started punching people in the head at random. The bloke right in front of me copped it. Thankfully, he seemed okay, and most of us ran. My car was fine, as was I. 2CVs aren't known as getaway vehicles, but this was probably the fastest one had been driven since For Your Eyes Only. Did the scenes take the shine off the results? Temporarily, yes, I was worried that someone might have been badly hurt. But the lingering memories of the day are happy ones. What an occasion. 10 years, worth the wait.
As Matt has already said, it was sort of a legendary game that we've been talking about for well over 20 years now. But not only that, many Luton players that didn't even play are reminded about that game. Pete Fincham.
I remember playing a five-a-side game and Marlon Beresford was in goal for the opposition some years later. I didn't realise it was him, but until someone pointed out that, you know, he'd been a great goalkeeper. So, of course, I had the opportunity to talk about the cup game against them in 2003 and Stephen Glass's free kick and that wonderful game. And then, of course, he goes, oh, Watford, why is it every Watford fan talks to me about the 4-0 against Luton? I wasn't even there then. And it's a common problem for ex-Luton players when they meet you Watford fans, that they'll always be talking about the 4-0 like they're in some way accountable, having turned up half a decade later.
And for many Watford fans, this isn't a rivalry that they know. I wasn't at this game, and I'm of a certain age to remember what it was like in the 1980s. And apart from the game we played them at the beginning of the season, it's been a long time since we've played each other. So is it a rivalry? Do you miss it, Matt?
I don't miss it. I think I always quite enjoyed the rivalry, even, you know, the difficult bits, including that walk, you know, that running the gauntlet back to the railway station after this particular game, which was hairy.
But as Pete Fincham missed a rivalry.
Rivalry is part of life, and football is so much worse for not having proper rivalries. And I've got to say, the last 10 or so years has been lacking something for me, because I can't get excited about playing QPR in the same way as I get excited about playing Luton. And the rivalry between teams is what is part of the toxic intoxication of us all. We're rational people. And then we're rational, and then we're irrational, and then that's largely built around passion. And with passion can be any reason for having such passion. I mean, people are passionate about art, God knows why, but they are. And taking away that passion, even temporarily, somewhat diminishes life a little bit.
Good thing about that, John, which was absolutely wonderfully put together, so congratulations and thank you to everyone involved in that, is I knew that even what happened, even regardless of what happened at Kenilworth Road this weekend, we'd have that to listen to and would feel instantly better, and it has proved to be the case. What an absolutely monumental day that was. And I think this afternoon the game at Kenilworth Road this weekend has sort of reverted to type, wasn't it? Everyone talked about what it'd like playing Luton in the build-up to that 4-0 game. We've had another one this weekend, so it's really nice to have that 4-0 to look back on. But just the different memories, the way people remember different things, getting to the ground, getting away to the ground, what it was like inside the ground. You know, Pete talking about the incessant singing for an hour before the game, back and forth for between each fans. It's desperate, aren't we, to sense that again. It was so evocative, so great to listen to. And, you know, basically those are the afternoons why we become football supporters. They're the ones, if you could bottle it, you could sell afternoons like that. You could sell the atmosphere, you could sell the memories for an absolute small fortune. It's, if you're not a sports fan, you will never know what that feeling is like, that to absolutely demolish your rivals. Not just demolish them, but demolish them after such a long wait. They were so used to having it their own way for the majority of the time in the derby. So just a wonderful, evocative listener, and I think we're all grateful that we've got that to listen to after the game we've had to watch this weekend. But yeah, thank you to everyone for feeding back and providing those thoughts. And it does, you know, the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. It does bring home the sort of element of, you know, it is by far and away the dangerous is the wrong word, but there is an edge when you go to Kenilworth Road, just the whole nature of it, what the ground's like, where it is, and the history. It is a different experience, and I think that comes across wonderfully there. It's, if you haven't done it, you'll never know what it's like until you've done it. It is a different experience, and yeah, great to hear that everyone got out safely, basically, that afternoon. But wonderful audio, much needed.
Yeah, Jay, so were you working that day?
I was working, yeah. So 23 and a half, 24 years ago, I was working for a well-known high street retailer. I was actually in Kensington High Street. And being a Saturday, shops were open. And I was a department manager at the time. And I think you had to do every sort of other Saturday or something like that. And it was my turn to work. So I had no idea what was happening in the game, but managed to pop down to the office behind the scenes at full time to listen to the scores coming in, and nearly fell off my chair when the score was announced. And then they actually said, and that was a score at half time, and I was like, oh my god, why didn't we score anymore in the second half? How disappointing. But yeah,
greedy.
It was a bit of a shock when I heard the score.
That was a great day. Today wasn't a great day, but we've still got four games to go, and they could all be fantastic days. That's my mindset, and I'm sticking to it, Mike. Thank you very much to Stu Hutchinson, Matt Rowson, Pete Fincham, Colin Mace, and Mike Smart for their stories and sharing what that day on the 4th of October 1997 felt like when Watford won 4-0 away to Luton Town. Thank you very much, Michael. See you Tuesday.
Yes, we need to be better on Tuesday. We got diddled there, basically. There's no point hiding. There's no point pretending. We lost to the better, smarter team this weekend. And if we're going to get promoted, we need to pull our socks up. Still very much in our hands. I still back our players. There is enough talent in this side
to get this over the line. It's in our hands, and we need to realise that it needs to be. We need to get this out of our system quickly, and it needs to be much, much improved on Tuesday, and then just an absolutely gargantuan game against Millwall. Massive game. But again, that's why we get into football. These are the games we want to be involved with. We want to be scrapping at the top, don't we? We want games to count. There's billions of teams that would swap with us to have, you know, go through the nerve-shredding emotion that we're going through on what feels like a daily basis at the moment. So try and welcome it in. Try and embrace it, says me. I mean, listen to this. I've just got a text from my brother. I'm going to out my brother, Andy, here, who's just texted me to say he reckons Bournemouth will finish above us, who are currently 11 points behind us before their kickoff. So I get it. I know how everyone's feeling after that. And me, you know, God, you know what I'm like, my misery guts. But, you know, this is a good side. And if you're going to get promoted, you need to be decent. If you're going to be promoted, you need to react well. That's what this team can do. We know they can do it. Let's see what they've got. And let's try and enjoy it. Come on, you golden boys. Thanks.
Thank you to Adam, of course. And thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
And we're back after Watford play Norwich City at Carrow Road. They'll be promoted already. But let's see what the Hornets can pull off.
The Athletic.